Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play dude.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah.
We're doing another episode of the Toy Department. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. I got to tell you, man, I am feeling way better this week than last week. Hopefully
good.
You can sort of hear it in my voice. How are you doing?
Excellent. Fresh. Ready to rock.
Are you still infected with the March Madness?
I never caught it this year.
So, all right. Now, look, I know you are noted college sports curmudgeon.
I wouldn't call myself a curmudgeon. I would just call myself like a unbiased judge.
You wouldn't call yourself a curmudgeon, but I would call you a curmudgeon. So, when you say you didn't catch the fever, were you like, did you just not watch it? Were you off watching fake sports like golf or?
A little golf. The Tiger stuff is exciting, but no, I mean, I've watched. If we're talking about like really locked in watching, I've probably watched a total of about 2 hours of college basketball over the weekend.
Two hours in total over the whole weekend.
In my defense, well, maybe four. In my defense, a lot of time on Sunday and Thursday, I was working. So I had the TV on as I was hosting a radio show and was only partially paying attention.
Gotcha.
So there's probably another 8 hours of that.
I also watched about 4 hours of college basketball on Thursday night. And then probably, I don't know, four more on Friday night. And then how many, I don't know, maybe two, three more during the Thursday and Friday days. And then I'd say
a lot.
Eight
I get it.
And
but
Saturday
but here's
and Sunday.
The thing, like how much of that basketball was really entertaining basketball?
Oh, quite a bit of it. Oh, really? Quite a bit of it.
I don't know. I feel like you probably got 50% at best.
I mean, look, anytime you have a tournament, you're going to, you know, with, what is it, there's 65 games across the tournament? Mm-hmm. Like,
I don't even
you're
mean
not
competitive
gonna get,
games.
Like, you're not going to get, like, 100% entertaining basketball during that time, or it'd be the greatest tournament ever. You know what
well,
I mean?
But here's my point. Did you watch any of Michigan-Syracuse?
That was a game that I actually did not really see all that much of, and I saw enough of it to understand the point that you were making.
Yeah,
and you could really substitute nearly any latter day Syracuse tournament game for that. So
there were a few of those where even close games that became compelling late were pretty awful to watch.
Yeah,
for
like
much
Syracuse
of
is a tough watch, and I found myself really, you know, sort of torn as that game because I saw maybe the last, I don't know, 7-8 minutes of it, 7-8 basketball minutes of it, I should say. And I found myself really torn, you know, because you're sort of naturally rooting for the upset. I am generally sort of annoyed at the media genuflection at Tom Izzo, who by the way has not not made it to the second weekend for 3 straight years. But next year, watch when tournament time comes around, everybody's going to be like, "Well, I'm taking Tom Izzo in the spot. You got it. Izzo always delivers this time of year."
I had Izzo.
But, you know, so I got those interests, but I also have my bracket interests. And then there is the, like, I don't know, man, if I can watch another game with a team that seems just completely confused about how to deal with this zone. And, you know, it's no knock on Syracuse because obviously, like, this is now
a few times
that they punched above their weight in this tournament.
That's right.
You know. But, like, it's not fun. It's like, in a different way, obviously. It's like watching the Rockets. Like, I respect what they do, but it's not fun to watch them do it necessarily. You know what I mean?
I don't totally agree with that comparison, but I see what you're saying. And my point is that Syracuse is not that unique in this respect. The particular aggression of their 2-3 zone may be unique, but there is a lot of bad basketball in this tournament, and I've. It's not even like a qualitative or I don't know. I'm not trying to be judgy. The point I'm literally saying, I put it on and I can't stick with it.
Yeah. See, I
can't watch a first half of ugly basketball played between 19 and 20 year olds.
I agree with you. I think the word you were looking for earlier was subjective, right? It's not subjective as to whether or not this is good basketball. It's just qualitatively not
right.
well played basketball exactly. a lot of the time. To the point where when you see a game that is being played at a high level or where both teams are playing well, like it sticks out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and also I hate to be this guy. I really do. I apologize in advance. But am I really the only one who was a little disappointed that we finally get the 16-1 upset and it was a blowout?
No, that I mean, see, this is the thing. All right, and look, we've
like
had this
in a vac. Like, out, if you step, you know, the 1,000-mile view of that is cool, right? Like, oh my god, this team of nobodies with this 5'7" electric point guard that I am totally in love with just put a whooping on a team in Virginia that, although they don't play the same design as Syracuse, they often have similar ugly, unpleasant results in their wins. So I'm happy to see them go down. It's thrilling again from a distance, but like in 10 years, we're going to remember Loyola's upsets more because they came with a big play. They're like, what do you remember from UMBC's upset?
All right. So I
it's just the score differential.
And I don't know, man. I disagree with that on a couple of levels.
Okay.
All right. So well, let's.
And to be clear, good for them. I'm not trying to diminish their accomplishment. Their accomplishment is even more incredible. It's just this whole thing, the whole principle of March Madness, since nobody cares about the regular season of college basketball. I mean, realistically, in the grand scheme of things, nobody gives a flying fart about any of the regular season. So the whole principle here is entertainment. It's not that we're attached to the players. Most of us are not particularly attached to the teams. It's gambling and excitement. And that was less exciting than it could have been.
I mean, I guess to me, there's a, yes, you certainly have the gambling bracket manifestations of all of that, which are obviously they're in play the whole time. Right. But I think you're also like, I don't know, like I like most people, you start paying attention to college basketball around the time the NFL playoffs wrap up. But like I saw a lot of Virginia this year and I have a ton of like they went 17-1 in the ACC.
Yeah,
sorry,
yeah.
20-1 if you count the tournament. And I saw a lot of those games. Like, so to me, you know, as the second half tips off, I believe it's a tie game at halftime. And then UMBC went on a run in, you know, at the start of the first half, opened up the game up to 8. There's all of this like, wait, could this happen? Is this happening? And then
I thought they were up at halftime.
No, it was close game. If they were up, it wasn't more than 2 or 3 points. And they kind of opened it up, and then in the whole second half, it's happening. And it's happening more, and you're going like, can you believe it? And it wasn't until like maybe 5 minutes left to go when they were up 20-something where you're like, oh, yeah, this absolutely has to happen. And then you have 5 minutes to sort of sit in the magnitude of like a 16 seed is going to do it. And not only are they doing it against this team that wasn't blown out by anybody all year.
Yeah.
And like destroy
again,
the
I'm
ACC.
Not diminishing the accomplishment. So, it's like, an incredible accomplishment.
You have all of this time to bask in it, and they're playing great. Like these guys are banging threes from all over the court.
Yeah.
You know, they're in the last couple minutes of the game because Virginia's pressing, they're dunking all over the place. Like it was to me delightful. And I would say to you, I can off the top of my head go,
No.
In terms of like our lasting memory of this tournament.
Yes.
Off the top of my head, I can go 1982, Virginia loses to Chaminade. And that was, by the way, like in the Great Alaska Shootout, right? Number one, Virginia with Ralph Sampson loses to Chaminade, which for a time was considered the greatest upset of all time. And to me, this is so much greater than that. Like, there's no way that I'm going to, like, the Loyola Chicago thing is fun and cool. There's no way in 5 years that I'm not going to remember UMBC or Virginia over whatever happened in that game.
Again, you're going to, I'm not, we'll all remember this because it's historic. And the accomplishment, again, is tremendous. And I enjoyed it. I like you, basked in the unbelievable nature of this win for the final 5 minutes of basketball. Me and my roommate just sitting watching it going, oh, my God.
I was, like, texting people. I'm like, are you watching this game?
Yeah, I get it. And I agree with all of that. It's just, like, I don't know. I feel a little bit robbed of, like, the big shot for the 16 to upset the one.
Yeah, I mean, look. Well, I mean, you certainly got that. And that was the one thing that Loyola Chicago obviously did deliver.
Twice.
which was fun. You know, the Michigan shot was fun. Like, there's been some, you know, if you're just picking out, like, single moments, some really great single moments in this tournament, there's been some fun upsets. There's been, like, it's been mostly a fun tournament. I guess, you know, the thing that to me is interesting is now there are so many high seeds out. Like, this, yeah. It's weird in the second weekend. Like, we all want the Loyolas of Chicago of the world to win. I really wanted UMBC to win a second game, which it seemed like they had a shot of doing for a while.
For a while, they were in it, yeah.
But it's a little tough sometimes, right, when we get to this, like, Sweet 16 round, and then you have to watch them, and you know nothing about these guys. And, it's the second half of this could be strange. And I will say the ratings for the weekend, first weekend, were down quite a bit. So I think they were down like 10% over last year. So, and I don't know if that's just the general TV thing. Or all the anthem protests.
Were there anthem protests?
No, I'm kidding.
Is that a joke?
Yeah, I was kidding. Sorry. But I don't know. I'm curious.
Sorry you caught me off guard. That was a good joke.
Thanks. I'm curious to see where this thing goes in the consciousness. You know, as far as whatever, I'm not going to argue that the basketball is horribly sloppy at times. It is. I mean, some of these teams, we've literally had a couple teams that just couldn't make a shot. North Carolina couldn't make a shot for like 20 minutes. Clemson couldn't make a shot for like 20 minutes. And those, like, some of them are like good shooting teams. Sorry, Auburn was the team I meant.
Yeah, man.
Like, North Carolina is a good shooting team. They couldn't hit anything. It was wild.
Clemson smashing Auburn, the North Carolina loss. Like, these games, those were games that were on while I was working. And just like.
Yeah, they were rough. But, you know,
awful.
You're going to have some rough games in a 64-team tournament. You just are.
Eesh, come on, man.
You know what I mean?
I understand your point, but, again, it's not – I'm not trying to crap on kids. I'm not trying to, like, even say anything controversial. I'm just saying, for me, it plays into the everything we talk about with entertainment.
Right.
There's so much. And I chose on multiple occasions – to watch McMafia or Love this week while keeping the scoreboard up in case a game got close in the last 8 minutes.
All right. Well, let's get into this because McMafia is the, to me, is the North Carolina first and second half shooting, the North Carolina Texas A&M game of international crime dramas.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure I would have chosen to watch McMafia if it hadn't been an assignment.
Okay.
I'm just saying I had other things to do.
You know what? Look, I'm just going to raise my hand on this one.
This is yours.
This was
your
a me. You know, I'd heard some good things. And I, like, about halfway through this last night, and I almost wanted to text you, but I knew we'd talk about it today. I kind of realized, like, the show that I think you feel the Americans is, like, that was this for me. Like, I'm like, at some point I was just like, wow, I am not interested in this at all. Like, I don't really care what happens to these people. And maybe, I don't know if it's the contrast of watching Collateral, which we'll get into later, which I think covers some similar ground, but in, it just executes it so much at so much of a higher level, but like, McMafia's slow. There are very few, like, winning performances.
Yeah, and it's
the people drama of it is terrible. I'm out on this one.
There are some performers I like, David Strathern is a longtime favorite of mine. I'm going to biff her name, but the lady whose name I looked up last week, Rylance, Juliet Rylance, yeah. Is it?
Mark Rylance's daughter.
Not related as far as we know. but she, I loved her in The Nick, and it's not that she's bad here, but as you say, everything feels a little maybe ham-fisted. It's slow. The characters are caricatures in many ways.
Yeah.
And I don't want to put it all on the lead, but
it's not a great performance.
Whether it's the performance or the character, it's just so his sort of moral concerns are so he's so put upon and it's such a you see the sort of machinations, if you will, of, oh, will he or won't he go to the dark side? It's so sort of nakedly trite.
Yeah, I'm really glad you feel the same way, because I was worried that if you like this, we were going to have to get into a thing.
No, it's really hard. It was hard to watch. And in fact, last night, I ended up watching four of these because I had watched three last week and we pushed it, so I wanted to make sure I had watched one semi-recently. And last night when I was like, what was the homework again? Oh yeah, okay, well, maybe I should watch one more episode of McMafia, and I just couldn't bring myself to do it. Instead, I watched an episode of The Voice and some New Girl reruns.
I think you won, you know?
I feel good about it.
Yeah. I definitely switched it off and was like, I should have watched the new episode of Unreal that came on last night.
I did watch that last night.
Oh, you did? So you were fully caught up.
Well, I mean, I haven't watched the first two seasons, but I've watched the first four episodes of season three.
Okay. So this was the one that I'm the most curious about your take on, knowing that, you know, you hate The Bachelor.
Well, hate is a strong word. I just...
You had some angry words when
I was mad you made me watch it. It's the sort of thing that it doesn't ordinarily offend me because I don't have to lock into it. If someone puts on, I know a ton of people who watch The Bachelor. If someone puts it on and like we're talking shit about it and no one's really focused, I can live with that. I'm not like, I don't like walk around in my life angry about The Bachelor. But when you force me to like actually lock in on two episodes, it became very upsetting. That's true.
I see. Well, you know, look, this
that
show.
That being said, can I say going in, because before I say anything about how I felt, I want to ask you some questions about what's going on here.
Okay.
But going in, I thought this will be fun because knowing about the I mean, it's such a part of the zeitgeist. Obviously, I know more than I would ever care to about the Bachelor franchise and how it works and the behind the scenes machinations and so on and so forth. So I was excited thinking here will be a fun satire of what happens behind the scenes at The Bachelor. Plus, I love Constance Zimmer. And I don't know the young lady's name, but...
Sherry Appleby?
She's very familiar.
She was on one of the, you know, you're a CW fan. She was on one of those CW shows. But
is that what it is?
Like back in the day, you know, like the beginning
let me see
of the
if I
CW.
Because I should have looked this up, but... Yeah.
I want to say they were like teenage
Roswell.
Aliens.
No, I didn't watch
Roswell.
Oh,
that's
it. She was in Charlie Wilson's War, though.
She was also on Girls. She was. So, yeah. Adam Driver did something very gross to her on Girls.
Right. As you may recall. I remember this. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, like, I have seen her in a variety of places, and I am a fan, and I think she's excellent. Here's the thing. This is not a light satire.
It is not a light satire, no.
So, was it ever a light satire?
No, I mean, look, the show is what it has been. You know what I mean? Like, I definitely think that they have some things to say about the, you know, behind-the-scenes machinations of a show like this. But I don't think that was ever the point of the show. It's a soap opera. You know what I mean? Like, that's
yeah.
what it is.
Okay. And you know I love a soap opera. So yeah. It's not that this isn't coming down my alley. It's that it caught me slightly unawares. I will say this show is, I don't know, you know, putting aside specific plots or conceit, this show is everything McMafia is not.
Yeah, it's light, it's fun, you know.
I mean, it's not light, but it
is. You're right.
Fun.
It's not light.
it's super intense, but it's fun. It is sometimes funny, always when it's funny, darkly funny, which I quite enjoy. The performances are great, electric, I would even say. Constance Zimmer is on fleek, if you will.
Yeah, no, it's this. The show is mostly a showcase for her, and I don't know if it was necessarily originated in that way, but I think that they figured out, like, oh man,
yeah, like,
we have something here.
You know what this is? Like, not to Me Too this for, you know, to overdo it, but, like, what this is a show about, like, in a meta way, this is a show about how dynamic lady actresses who have heretofore been confined to character parts on dumb guy shows should have their own shows.
Yeah.
Because this is a lady that, if you've ever seen Constance Zimmer in at any point in her career, frankly, she has been someone who in smaller roles pops on screen, makes an impact. You remember her, like, in a show like Entourage, with forgettable characters just, like, flying past your eyes at breakneck speed, she stands out. Like, in old television shows that you see, you know, you go back and see, oh my God, how many people got bit parts on this before they ever... You remember her parts. She's just...
Yeah,
great, and this is just she just gets to throw down.
Yeah,
and
like it's like awesome. Almost totally a makeup call for Entourage in a way, right? Because she plays a high level studio exec on that show, who's mostly just put upon by Ari. Like, that's pretty much her role on the show. And
yeah,
it's like,
put
I feel like
by Ari,
if you
like
took that character,
sexually,
yeah, and like made her like the real kick ass person who would ascend to that position in life.
That's right.
Yeah, that's the character she's playing on.
And a
show.
Bit of a psychopath, which makes it super fun and interesting.
More than
exciting.
A bit, I would say.
Yes, yeah. Pretty much a sociopathic nut. And both she and Shiri Appleby are just power hitters, man. They make this show.
Yeah, the male characters, you know, like they definitely, you know, when you look at, like, the Craig Bierko character, he plays the nominal head of the show, this guy named Chet.
Right.
He's basically set up to be like the stooge of the show.
Yeah, he's
like
a doofus.
Ah, look at men. Men are dumb. But you
know
what?
It's
like
a Lifetime show, and it makes sense because it flips traditional gender dynamics on their head.
It's a little ham-handed, but I'm totally okay with it, frankly.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
I don't know if I'd call it ham-handed so much as like a little bit staggeringly overt.
Yeah, and look, I do think
it's not done crudely or unpleasantly or poorly.
Yeah, this is one of those things that I would say they've done a much better job here in season 3 in the episodes you've seen. I think of maybe finding the balance.
Okay,
and there have been other times when he's just been a clown, just, you know, a real obvious clown.
Yeah,
you know,
well, I mean, he's still mostly a clown. It's just in general, I think, the way they flipped gender dynamics are not upsetting or again, ham-handed just feels like degradatory to me in a way that there's nothing bad about it. It's just obvious.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think he could be a more nuanced character, I guess is what I'm saying, but I don't care.
Of course he could be,
care.
But so could 90% of women characters in, like, premium TV shows.
Exactly the point I'm making. That is exactly the point I'm making. Yeah.
So, like, I think that's deliberate, and it's not wrong. It's just obvious.
Yeah, no, that's fair. But yeah,
anyway, I'm in on this show. I'm just wondering if I should go back and watch the first two seasons now. But I'll say this: just like, even though there are heavy bits of drama that I do not totally understand, you know, but people's past being brought up in oblique ways that I'm not caught up on.
Although, I mean, if you know, the scenes with Rachel and her therapist, are pretty, yeah, like, you're getting a lot of the exposition there. For, like,
some
like,
stuff went down last night.
A lot of season two cliff notes.
They're cliff notes, but they don't tie, they're not cliff notes. They're like random pieces of information from season two.
Yeah.
That probably seem like cliff notes to you because you know what happened, but I don't really know what happened. You know, I know, slight spoiler, I know two people died somehow, but that's really it. And people keep blaming each other and themselves for it, but I don't understand how legitimate any of that is. And also, I will say to you, in a non-spoiler fashion, another thing happened on last night's episode that clearly references some major history that I just don't even know if it's been covered in the past on the show or not. But it's pretty intense and dramatic.
Yeah. Now I'm really upset that I watched McMafia instead of watching last night's episode.
Yeah. Probably a mistake in general, but it was your mistake.
Right. I gotta own it. Like, just like Rachel and those two dead people,
I got no one to blame but yourself.
Essential honesty right here. That was me.
Essential honesty. The essential honesty thing is hilarious. Like, all of this, it's dark and funny and entertaining and, like, it's an energetic show. It propels itself forward with these hilarious. Oh, and another person who's great, by the way, is the fake
Caitlin Fitzgerald, I believe is her name, is an actress. She was on
she's good.
But Masters of Sex. She was on Masters of Sex, the show.
Oh, I never watched that. But I'm not talking about her. She's good. But I'm talking about the guy who is the host, the fake bachelor.
Oh, the fake Chris Harrison.
That's the name I was looking for.
Yeah.
He is phenomenal. It is every single time they show him, he delivers this level of caricature performance of Chris Harrison that is so. This is a highfalutin way to describe a very silly performance, but there's this. I have referenced on this podcast before and love to reference in life this author, Tim O'Brien, who wrote a set of short stories about the Vietnam War, where he makes a point that sometimes in order to tell the most essential truth, you have to make stuff up. And that caricature that this guy's doing of Chris Harrison is like, it's completely over the top. The things he says and the situations they set up are completely ridiculous, but somehow it is the most pure truth of who Chris Harrison is as a TV personality that could ever be on screen. And it's just spectacular.
Yeah. You know, Chris Harrison, not a big fan of this show.
I am not surprised.
You know, he's a producer of the actual Bachelor. So I think he's pretty invested in the Bachelor as a show, but I also think he's kind of bugged by this, his character. So
I'm sure he is, but because that guy is really not, he has no role in the show besides those ridiculous cutscenes. But oh man, he knocks it out of the park every time, and you didn't watch last night's episode. He has a great one in last night's episode. No spoilers for those of you who want to watch it. I would say you could jump right in to episode, what is it, 4 of season 3, and just watch that. And even if you're a little confused at times, get a perfect sense of what this show is and how good it can be.
All right. I would recommend, if you do think about going back, season 1 is pretty excellent. I was not as much of a fan of season 2. However, obviously there's a lot that's happening in season 3. That's references related. Season 2. And then I think season 3 has been a very nice rebound through 4 episodes. So,
Well, I'll tell you, the 4th episode is – everything is turned up to 11.
What do you think of the fake show, just in general, like within the show? The Everlasting, I believe, is the name of the
– Well, again, I don't know how typical this is, but because of the character who you mentioned that they cast as the girl, as the bachelorette, I feel like it might be different than it's been in past seasons.
It is. The other seasons have been, male suitors instead of female. So it's been female contestants.
Oh, that's funny. Both seasons?
Yeah. Both first two.
Wow. Okay. Well, anyway, a lot of this is about feminism because You know, it's about whether this woman who's like a legitimate professional, intelligent, successful, whether she's selling herself short by being on the show and whether it's serious and, you know, it's getting into all that stuff, which is entertaining, I think. But I don't know if it's typical of, I mean, obviously it's not typical of what this show has been about. So what do I think of Everlasting? I mean, it's funny as a device.
Yeah.
And like I said, I think when they do sort of show the cutaway scenes from Everlasting, they've done a phenomenal job of satire. I mean, this is what satire is supposed to be, exposing the sort of sick truth about something while via an exaggerated version of it. And yeah. I think they've hit the exact right note.
Well, and I think it's funny because the first season of the show, you know, as I said, I liked the show a lot, but I did sort of think that the Everlasting was a bit over the top in terms of, you know, portraying what
the actual
show is like. But I would say that really events in The Actual Bachelor that have occurred since the show started airing, I don't know if it's all that far off, to be honest. Like, no one's died of The Bachelor. That has not happened.
But it could. But and here's the other thing.
There's been a lot of other stuff.
Yeah, and I mean, this year on The Bachelor, or I guess it was The Bachelorette, we actually had this whole feminism thing. I mean, it was a little different because we weren't looking at it from the behind-the-scenes angle. But what was The Bachelorette's name that you made me watch?
I don't remember which season did I make. It was this last season with
it
Rachel?
She's like a doctor or something, right?
She's
a lawyer.
Yeah, she's a lawyer.
Yeah, like that was the zeitgeisty conversation around that season of The Bachelorette was, oh, she's a higher caliber of bachelorette than we usually have, and it's a higher caliber of male than we usually have, and these are real people that...
Well, there was a lot of race conversation around Rachel's season, so I don't know if maybe that was...
Well, there was race, too, but it was also like she's sophisticated, and Rachel was her name, that's right. Yeah. It was like she's sophisticated, she's looking for a real sophisticated relationship, not, you know, the typical bachelor fare.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, this mirrors that in a way. And this, again, this turns it up to 11 in a funny and insightful way, I think.
Yep. This season was sort of interesting in that the, of The Bachelor, in that they had a lot more sophisticated bachelorette candidates. And the actual bachelor was not really interested in any of that. Sophistication was not necessarily the thing he was going for.
Yeah, see, that doesn't make me laugh.
Yeah.
Like, in real life, that makes me sad.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I'm not going to get into what happened on the season of The Bachelor.
Just saying, like, what you just described is a guy who literally is trying to avoid intelligent women, because it's not like they're putting, you know, a 300-pound neuroscientist on there. He's deciding between 20-something very attractive women, some of whom are smart. And you just said he basically wanted nothing to do with the smart ones.
There was, you know, and it was funny because I don't think he was actively, consciously trying to avoid them.
No,
you can sort of see this, like, water finds its level. And there is one point where he's talking to this girl and she's like, yeah, I studied abroad. I went to Yale. And he's like, you went to Yale? He's like, I delivered pizzas. And like,
Yale.
Yeah, and it was... Yeah, it was very much very encapsulating. So sorry, I was not laughing at that happening. It was a little bit more of
I know. I'm just saying, like, this is why I don't want to watch The Bachelor.
Yeah. No, if you're in for that, if you find that entertaining, then you like The Bachelor. And if you're not, then you're Kolsky.
I find it entertaining enough for like a 30-second podcast conversation.
Fair enough. All right, yeah. So we mentioned Collateral. Should we jump into that as well?
Yeah, this is going to be an interesting conversation.
Okay. In what way?
Didn't love it.
Didn't love it. Okay.
No. I thought it was good. Don't understand all the buzz. I thought there were a lot of loose threads. I thought they nominally addressed some like very topical issues, but not all that deeply. Like, I don't know what all the hubbub was about.
All right. Well, I liked it a lot more than you.
I thought this was like, here's what I would say. This was a poor man's Night Of.
I don't know that I'm going to argue with that.
It was good, I guess.
But
I really
don't you think some of that
Mulligan?
Was the? Don't you think some of that was the episode length? You know what I mean? Or not the episode length, but the number of episodes that you know. The Night Of had what was it? 8, 10?
I think
and
6.
We had four here.
That makes it a natural analog.
Yeah.
Yes, but I'm saying it also dealt with a lot of the same territory and handled it less interestingly, I think.
Well, look, that's a high bar. You know what I mean?
It is, but that's a high bar.
I mean, I thought The Night Of was one of the best shows on television that year. So
I agree, but wasn't that the buzz on this? So, I mean, isn't that the bar it set for itself?
Oh, I don't.
This is one of the great things you can watch right now.
I just heard it was good. I don't know that I would go with like, oh, this is one of the best things. But I did think that Carey Mulligan's performance was fantastic. I thought she was that really
She good. Was excellent, no question. And there was a lot of good stuff about this show. It was interesting.
Yeah.
In terms of the social issues it was implying things and inferring things about. There is some interesting stuff here. I didn't think it was as entertaining as The Night Of. I didn't think it was quite as dynamic visually as The Night Of, and there was just less there from that sort of social perspective.
Yeah, I mean, like there is a to borrow the SportsCenter phrase, like a little doing too much aspect of it. Like,
yes,
I don't know if it needed to touch on hot button immigration and sexual harassment and get, you know, gays in the priesthood.
Well, I think they could have cut out two or three, probably two at least, of the side storylines to do better justice to the others.
Yeah.
Because as you say, you've got the priest and her girlfriend, but also her girlfriend is an immigrant and has police issues and also witnessed the murder kind of. And then you have the, you get a little bit of PTSD effects sort of, and like the horror of war,
right,
and returning from it. You get sexual harassment in the military and sexual assault. You get, and like all, there's like 10 different side storylines where if there had been 7, maybe this is a better show.
Yeah, and 4 episodes to wrap that up, all the while where you have to sort of advance the ball on this murder mystery. You know what I mean?
Which like
this
turned out to really
top
not
procedural,
be...
essentially, you know?
And even that, like, who did the murder mystery ever become particularly compelling or interesting to you?
No, man,
like,
you're making me
like
this
of,
less.
I was, and I, what's that?
You're making me like this less.
I'm sorry. And again, it was good. It was good. I think it was just overhyped for me. And I think it is such an easy comparison to The Night Of for all these reasons, and falls short of it in a pretty dramatic way, that like, yes, that's why it's still good, is because The Night Of was truly fantastic.
Yeah. And look, but, you know who did it pretty early on, right? And so then the question is, well, are they going to catch them? But you don't ever really think that they're not going to catch them, right? So,
right, and the question, I guess, is also why, and the answer is not very satisfactory. I mean, it's just, and again, I think it really comes down to the what you sort of hit on, which is there's 9 different things they're trying to talk about from a social perspective, in addition to trying to convince you there's something compelling about the crime drama side of it, and it's just too much.
Yeah, you're right. You won me over on this. I you're right.
I feel like this is a rare treat for me and our listeners. I'm not even saying don't watch it, because it's like 3 hours and 45 minutes, pretty well spent.
Yeah, like it breezes by pretty. Like it's a decent world to spend some time in.
And again, if you're a Carey Mulligan fan, it's a must watch,
yeah,
because she really is good. And she really is. She plays this part in a way I'm not sure I've seen. And it's subtle and interesting.
Yeah. And particularly having watched Mudbound not that long ago, like it's such a different role, you know.
Yes. She is really a fantastic actress.
Yeah. She's good. She should do more movies. Like, see her in some more movies.
I'm down with that.
All right. Let's see. What else have we covered? Oh, you know, The Chi wrapped up.
Yes.
That was a quality season of television right there. Chi's got to be the best thing on Showtime right now, right?
I think it's the best thing on Showtime ever. What's ever been better on Showtime? This is Showtime stepping up a level.
Yeah, I guess you can make a case for, like, first season of Homeland when we thought Homeland was going to be really good.
But then it wasn't.
I think it's probably, this is Showtime stepping up a level. Although, look, it's one season, you know what I mean?
One season, but it's just, to me, it's just of a different character of show, a different nature of show, a different level of show than virtually anything that's ever been on Showtime. And the way it has woven together, I mean, so much, and I don't want to spoil anything, because this is a show where the mystery is not the mystery, if that makes sense.
Yeah, is there a mystery?
Or like, maybe I should say the crime, the sort of, the scene-setting crime is not the mystery.
Yeah.
What the mystery is, something you don't even know is a mystery as you're watching until you have the answers to it.
Yeah.
And this show, it's almost like this show, you know, opens up with a helicopter bird's eye view of a Chicago neighborhood and just zooms further in and further in and further in. And things you didn't notice were connected become connected. And things you didn't expect to relate are interwoven. And what Lena Waithe has done here, I think, is phenomenal. I feel probably an inappropriate sense of pride just because she went to my high school.
Yes.
And I know part of this is there are things about this show that are indelibly Chicago that I'm not sure resonate nationally. But I am also really confident that what's been done here from a thematic and just a successful from acting and the narrative and the character, but everything they've done has been so successful that I'm confident this show is great beyond just me loving my city.
Yeah. Look, there's, as someone who, you know, has been to Chicago like 3 times, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, there's plenty of that I'm sure went over my head, and it does not really change your, perspective on the show at all. Yeah. You know, in terms of the mystery not being, like, you know, the plot in a lot of ways is incidental. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Finding out who did the thing was maybe, you could make a case, is the least satisfying thing that happens in the final episode. And not in, like, I don't necessarily mean that as insult. It's just not that important because you are so invested in these characters and these
right.
people.
And it's what you learn about who did this inciting crime is not a story about who did a crime. It's a story about the people of the neighborhood.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I'm trying
to
say.
Yeah, exactly. Like to me, the emotional crescendo, and I think I can say this without really spoiling anything if you haven't seen any of it, like, the thing that really got me was the freaking school play. You know, like, so
amazing. The school play was unbelievable. And the scene after it in the hallway with the three boys. I mean, those kids are incredible.
Yeah.
And all three of those boys, first of all, I think the heavyset kid is the obvious star because he's incredibly dynamic. He's hilarious every time he's on screen. He delivers his lines perfectly.
If you haven't seen the show, you're going to want to adopt this kid
he's just so lovable. The lead kid does a really incredible job over the course of the season, I think, Kevin, of playing a difficult emotional part in a way that resonates as a, you know, he's 10 or something.
Yeah.
And then,
well, that's how I get that Black Panther role there.
Yeah, I hope he's in the next one. I hope that means he's part of the future of the Black Panther franchise. Anyway, the other kid, I think, is the one who could slide under the radar and be underrated, but playing that broody kid who's caught at you know, 10 or 12 years old, caught between real violence and friends who are trying to help him is hard.
Yeah. I mean, that kid has to do a ton of nonverbal acting, which I think is really hard at age 12.
And he's whatever excellent. He is. Yeah. And his older brother is that. I mean, the acting across the board in this series is tremendous. I have just constant glowing things to say about The Chi. I just think it's the fact that it's the best thing Showtime's ever done isn't even really the point. It's just one of the most unique and well executed things on television.
Yeah, it's a damn good show. I'm excited to see where it goes next. So,
yeah, there's a lot of things that could happen, and how they decide to play the future and what sort of areas it explores is exciting and should be interesting.
Yeah, we'll see. If you like season 4 of The Wire, I would say like you'll really like this show a lot. So
yeah, it hits a lot of the same notes. It does the same work of weaving together a neighborhood from the school system up through adulthood. You know, tying the police and the community and the it's phenomenal.
Yep. Okay, so Love finished up as well, or at least, I mean, Love finished up the day it dropped. But we finished Love.
We finished Love.
So
and,
maybe we should revisit it.
I tweeted when I finished, like, I'm sad it's over, but what a great show. Yeah. And in a way, refreshing for a show to say, it's much less a Judd Apatow show, because you know he wants to just keep stretching things out, to say... We told a story. We told it well. We told it in the amount of time it deserved, and that's it.
Yeah, because it would have been really easy for me to just keep hanging out with these people
forever.
But they stuck the landing.
Broken
stuck
them up
the
again
landing
and gotten them back together again and broken people up and so on and so. But no, they told the story, and it was a beautiful story told. You know, we were talking off air about Atlanta. And that is the best show on television right now. What it does is unbelievable. But the fact that Atlanta and You're the Worst and you know, great shows like that also happen to exist right now, I think belies how rare and incredible it is to have a really great 30-minute comedy that has real heart and drama and feeling to it. And that's what Love is.
Yeah. You know, we're going to talk about Barry later. And I think it's the name of it.
Yep.
I you know, heard Bill Hader on a podcast, and you know, someone asked him, like, do you like comedy or drama? And he's like, I think that's sort of a false choice. He's like, the stuff that's interesting to me always has both. And right. I think that there are a lot of these really great shows that are funny, you know, and also have things to say about the people that are in them and hit real emotional notes. And that's just what they are. It's not necessarily about trying to be one or the other. It's just what they are. And and people have really just figured out that tone in a form that is pretty digestible. You know what I mean? Like, I liked Collateral, and I thought it kind of breezed. But, you know, you're given an hour and 15 minutes in some of those cases to some of those episodes, whereas, like, you know, these things are coming at you in 30, 35 minute chunks, and you wind up eating them like, you know, like a can of Pringles or something, you know?
Yeah. I mean, two things about that. I would say, even it's funny to make this point, because what this is really about, it's not that it's a 30 minute comedy. It's that, again, it's telling a story the right way. And if you're telling a human story the right way, there's going to be comedy and drama, because we're a funny, dramatic bunch. So that's one side. The other thing is, even Collateral, part of what made Carey Mulligan's character so realized and human and wonderful to watch was that she wasn't your traditional either depressed or hard-boiled policewoman. She was different, and there were some smirks in there, you know? Like, not exactly funny. It's not a funny show. There were no funny topics, but, like, there's humor in life, even in the dramatic moments. And she found that as an actress in a way that made her performance stand out in a show that was very dark and serious. And I think, you know, that says something about what it is to be a human character.
Yeah, for sure. That's a strong point. And on that note, I guess we should move on to the homework, which we sort of teased.
Yeehaw.
We mentioned Barry.
I'm very excited about this. I bet we listened to the same podcast. I forget who he was on with, but it was live, right?
Bill Simmons.
Simmons at South by Southwest, perhaps. And that got me very excited about Barry. I have a lot of respect for Bill Hader. I'm not sure he's earned it.
don't let that last SNL episode deter you from that.
Like, I have no love for any of the Hader era SNL. I have no love for SNL since like Adam Sandler left. Not in a hateful way. I don't watch. I don't care. Yeah.
I like Hader more than that. I enjoyed his time on Saturday Night Live, and as you know, because we talked about it at some point, I'm a fan of Documentary Now as well.
I don't like Documentary Now even. Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I think we feel the same about Bill Hader. I don't totally know why I feel that way, but I love that guy, and I have every confidence that a show that's endeavoring to do interesting, nuanced things. And for those of you who don't know, Barry is a new HBO show. That's a 30-minute comedy about a former Marine who is both a hitman and an acting student in Los Angeles. And to like undertake a nuanced, you know, dramatic comedy thing feels right up Bill Hader's alley to me. And I have every faith that he's going to do a great job for whatever reason. Yeah. And I'm very excited about this show.
I think it could be pretty good. And I will say, in this podcast favor, learning that Stefan bit that he did on there, that he didn't actually know any of the clubs or any of the things that he was going to say when he rolls out there. And that's why he winds up like cracking up like halfway through, made me enjoy that bit 100 times more. Like,
it's true. It's true. I just, whatever.
Also, the Maya Rudolph story is fantastic.
Saturday Night Live are probably not worth discussing, but yeah.
The Maya Rudolph story is fantastic from that pod as well.
It's a good pod.
Yeah.
But if you're not already listening to the Bill Simmons pod, like, you probably just don't like him.
Really? If you're not listening to the Bill Simmons, no offense to us, why are you listening to this?
dude.
sorry.
It's the wrong approach.
All right, so I'm going to throw in...
Great alternative is what I would have said.
Right. Sorry, I should market this thing better. I should also throw in there, I think we're both going to watch Silicon Valley, which comes back on Sunday as well.
Definitely. So I think I'm going to also try to finish Sneaky Pete.
I'm going to watch some more Sneaky Pete. I'm definitely going to watch some more Sneaky Pete, but I got a ways to go, so I can't commit to finishing.
Yeah, it's a longer season than I expected.
Yeah.
Not in a bad way. I just, it's a lot.
Yeah. So, watch some more of that.
A lot of TV these days, folks. Lot of TV. We may want to check back in on Atlanta sometime soon too, because I know we're both just mesmerized and amazed.
Yep. I want to throw this out. The Duplass brothers.
I love them.
Are involved. They're producing a documentary that's coming to Netflix and I think is out. It's called Wild Wild Country. I saw a trailer for it. It looks pretty cool.
Yeah. I saw Netflix. Netflix tried to sell me that recently. So yeah. I do believe it is out, or at least it's out very soon.
So yeah. So I'd like to give that some run.
Yeah, it is available. It's a TV show documentary. It's multiple episodes.
Yeah. So I think it's, I don't know how many episodes it is. I don't know if we'll get through all of
six
it. But
parts. Six parts, each at least an hour.
Yeah,
it's
I'd
a
say,
lot.
I'd say, you know, maybe watch one or two of those and we'll check in on it and see if we want to keep
going. Yeah, it appears, so this is about.
It's about a cult in Oregon.
A cult in, that moves from India to Oregon.
Yep. And then people don't take so well to the cult. And there you go.
I can't countenance this cult. I'm sorry. I love talking about not being able to countenance things. I don't know why. I don't think it actually makes sense, but I do feel like that's a thing people said at some point in the past.
Yeah, like, you know, in the 1700s, 1800s.
Yeah, yeah. Whenever they had cowboys, for real.
Yeah, the cowboys like counting and stuff, I think.
I don't know great about history. You see what I did there?
I did see what you did there, yeah. All right, so I feel like we probably gave people enough stuff to watch, right? Am I leaving
sure
anything
hope
out?
So. It felt like a big old pile to me.
The Americans is coming back. We're not assigning that for homework because Kolski's out.
Cares.
But
you know,
like,
there's a new show on AMC called The Terror. Are you aware of this?
I'm not. I really feel like I would have in the McMafia, you know, watching
yeah.
that I would have stumbled across whatever it is they're doing that's new. But
it's strange we never got. We didn't get more ads for it because it does come out Monday.
That might not be the best sign.
Can I read you a summary that I'm pretty sure is going to turn you off?
Okay.
A Royal Navy crew attempts to discover the Northwest Passage during a perilous voyage. Faced with treacherous conditions, limited resources, dwindling hope, and fear of the unknown.
I'm already out.
The crew is pushed to the brink of extinction, frozen, isolated, and stuck at the end of the earth. All that can go wrong does when a group of men desperate to survive struggle not only with the elements but with one another. Are you ready for the part that's going to make sure you never watch this show?
Okay.
While being hunted by a monstrous predator.
And look, I'm already stuck and isolated at the frozen end of the earth, so I don't know why I need to watch that. but you know what?
Yeah.
You know what I do need to watch? We did talk about this pre-show. I forgot it's coming back. Billions is coming back this week, right?
Yeah, I believe that is back on Sunday.
And you haven't seen you haven't seen any of Billions, correct?
Not a minute. Not a minute.
So
I do enjoy Paul Giamatti generally.
I think you're gonna like
this
show.
That's all I got. That's all I got on Billions.
Just saying that, I think you're gonna like this show because Paul Giamatti shows up to do Paul Giamatti things.
I want him chewing on scenery and yelling at people.
Yeah, that's literally all he does.
Great.
I should say all he does, because his character has a couple surprises for you. But
I do know one of them.
Oh, okay.
I remember a particular. What's the best way to put this? A buzz about a particular scene. Involving some waterworks, season one of Billions.
There you go. Well, I'll put it this way. He does a lot more scenery chewing than S&M play. So,
okay, that's good.
Yeah, I think you'll like it. I don't know. Does that mean you want to watch season three or no? You
gonna try to, I want to make you watch a couple episodes of season three and make sure I'm okay to start with season three, and then like a few weeks in, maybe we'll catch up on Billions.
I can commit to
that. I'll see if I can get into it.
This is I would not call this a great show, but I have a very good time watching it, and I think you will too.
I think we know there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. So, all right. I think that's a note we can wrap on.
Okay, bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling. And the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.